I firmly believe that we deserve, period.
I just feel like it's important to keep saying that out loud, that this is us learning in public.
The foundation of how to not have trash politics is really just relationships, right?
So if you're not aware of how powerful you are, then how can you be using your power to bring others up?
We're giving you collective liberation. We're giving you personal healing. We're giving you millennial auntie with a mic.
You're listening to Scene, the podcast.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Scene the Podcast. It's your girl, Nick, and we are back from some much needed downtime since the Christmas slash New Year's slash Kwanzaa slash Hanukkah slash any holiday that we could muster holiday time. I love this time of year, or I have loved this time of year, because the days just really like blur together and it doesn't even matter because we're holidaying. Like, I remember on several occasions I was like, what word day is it? And Nolan was like, what are you trying to say? And I'm like, the word, like, is it a Friday? Like, is it a Monday? Numbers don't mean anything. So I'm really glad to be back and hang out with you, Lala. How is your time off? Like, did you take time off? Were you able to get any rest while you've been managing just like holiday season and your fibro flare up and other things?
Yeah, I did take time off work. It's been nice to have some time off. But I've been having, fibro flare up things. And right now, as of today, I feel worse than I felt in many, many months. So I've gotten lots of rest, but I don't feel rested.
Yeah, got you.
So yeah, it is what it is. But it's still been nice to have time to myself and been able to read books and watch shows and just live my unencumbered life. Right? How about you? How has your time off been?
It was really delicious. My younger sister came to visit. So I was in Toronto for a bit of December visiting her and like my partner's family. And then we all flew back together and she stayed with us for a few days. So that was really nice. Like, her and her partner stayed with us. And I picked out a wedding dress, which I'm so excited about because your girl gonna look good.
Mm-hmm. Your wedding dress is so beautiful. When you sent me those pictures, I was in the middle of a conversation with Mel and just looked and like my mouth like dropped open and I completely like forgot what we were talking about. I was like, you have to see these pictures. It's so beautiful.
I love that there's a whole, I'm imagining, thank you for giving me the context and how you were when you received the photos, because.
And then they had the same reaction. They also, their mouth dropped open. They're like, I think I'm going to cry right now. It's so beautiful. She's so beautiful.
Listen, it was really special. Like, I, because my younger sister was in town, I had scheduled like the appointment to go look at dresses with her here and with my older sister here. My Joe didn't care. Like, she was invited, but she was very ambivalent to see.
On brand.
She's 16. But yeah, it was really special to like share that with my sisters. And
wait. Did you just say she's 16?
Yeah, dude, she turned 16 in November and I am not the same. Oh, I am not the same.
God, it's been a long pandemic. I can't believe she's 16.
Exactly. Wow. It's quite terrifying, but it's also super exciting because she's just like growing and blossoming and becoming like a little adult. Mm. So like spending time, it's kind of, so back to like holiday stuff, like it was kind of tough just because we couldn't spend time. I had my sister visiting with her partner, but we kind of bubbled with just them. So I didn't get to see my older sister like during like Christmas itself, or my mom or Joe. That was shitty. Like, it's just the reality of having like a parent that's working in healthcare, and the sort of reality that if she spends time with us who've just been on planes, that we could put her in harm's way. And her concern was the opposite. And I was like, everyone is vulnerable, but really you are, mm-hmm. because you've already gotten COVID last year. And like, there was an outbreak where you work. So anyways, like all that aside, was just deeply grateful for the time away from work, like, and also feeling very grateful for returning, you know, back to a job of my choosing. You know, like, I'm working for myself right now, and it's just really setting in the all of the choices that I have made to get me to this place, and I'm feeling really grateful for that. But
I feel the same. I'm excited to talk to my clients and catch up with them. Yeah.
That's awesome. I love that. Look at us. Damn.
We're doing it.
Full circle. We're really seeing ourselves, you know?
Love it. On brand.
Always on brand. This episode, we're taking things pretty easy and we're getting back into the swing of things. We're going to catch up because in addition to having some time away, I'm going to say this, maybe this is a proclamation. I don't even know if this is right for you, but I'm going to say that our favorite, most holy of holiest shows, do you disagree with that?
I don't at all.
Good lead up. Okay. Our favorite, most holy of holiest shows, Insecure, the show that really, I would say, like, brought us together in a real way, like weekly, that built the lead up for this podcast, like really it birthed our friendship, I would say. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Insecure, after 5 years, had its series finale. And I'm not over it. I'm really happy, but I'm not over it. And obviously it's like, who else am I going to sit and have an hour long podcast episode about this shit with than you, Lala? So that being said.
Yeah. And we have so much to say because what season was it that we watched together at my house?
Oh,
each week.
I think it was two.
And yeah, you came over every week.
Religiously.
Sushi. Yeah. We watched Insecure and talked about it for like an hour after at least.
Yep.
And each season since then, we've sent Marco Polos and voice notes and things back and forth, but it hasn't been this on the same level. So I'm excited that we get to do this today.
Oh my God, Marco Polos. That was like,
remember 2020? That from early pandemic? Oh yeah. God.
Throwback. Wow. So that all being said, this episode, obviously, you know, this is going to contain spoilers for season 5.
Of the spoilers.
All across the board. So if you haven't watched it, baby, what is you doing? Get your shit together because you're really missing out. And, you know, come back for our next episode when we talk about something entirely different. But this episode is dedicated to just us geeking out about the series wrap. So since we are in this new format of each episode being like a question that we ask each other or ask ourselves, my question, my thesis, my dissertation for you, for us to discuss today is, what is your biggest takeaway, singular or plural, it could be multiple, from Insecure, the series? I have things that I want to say, but I want to open the floor and see if there's anything that's on your heart, mind, spirit, soul that you want to get off your chest right now to claim as your, you know, biggest takeaway. Because I might piggyback off, but, you know.
Yeah, so there have been lots. And I know in a pretty recent episode, I talked about like Issa and Molly's friendship and the exploration there. But I think having just watched season 5, my biggest takeaway right now that I'm still sitting with and thinking about is something they explored in depth in season 5, which is thinking about the choices that you make in your life and recognizing that to a large degree, there are a lot of choices and they aren't necessarily right or wrong and they don't have to make sense to other people, but you need to be able to make a choice and then commit to it and, you know, give it all of the energy and all of the attention that it needs and how important it is to, I mean, consider, of course, your options, but ultimately be able to pick something and commit to it without maybe obsessing over, well, what if I had done this other thing? Right. Or maybe that was wrong. Or, you know, like just realizing that there aren't really necessarily right or wrong choices in life.
Yeah, I love that. That's a beautiful lesson. And I feel that way, especially with, obviously, you know, Molly and Issa, seeing their friendship and seeing them like in their work, you know, bag, doing respectively very different things. And it brings me back to that season where Molly was like really going to therapy. Like you could see her in session, and one of her, Dr. Rhonda, I'm pretty sure her name was her therapist. And her Dr. Rhonda was like, you say I should be a lot. Like she had these expectations of herself, right? Like that she was supposed to be on this path, that she was supposed to be successful in a type of way. And like fast forwarding to the wrap and now it all being done in what you just said about like, there are no wrong answers, right? It's like there's no wrong choice. It's like there are options, and to be able to take the step back and not have the plethora or like the, you know, smorgasbord of choices be the thing that completely upends you, but that you're able to recognize it, like it's an opportunity, it's a choice. I think it's been so cool to see both of them come to that place where they're able to decide on something, like in part deciding that they want to be in friendship with each other after so much.
Yeah. And I do. I'm glad you brought up Molly's therapy, because I think season 5 was such a beautiful depiction through Molly of how therapy works.
Dude.
And right? The fact that, you know, she's changed and grown so much. And I loved when she was able to say to Issa basically that, you know, you don't need to overthink it. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you want? And don't, you know, get in your own head about it.
Absolutely.
Which, you know, that was so Molly in early seasons, and really it was both of them.
Yep.
And you know, that's so relatable. It's so easy to overthink something to death. And by the time you've overthought it for however many hours or days or weeks, you can't even feel, you don't even know how you feel anymore.
Yes. Yes. And you don't even know what you're like really freaking out about. It's like you're in this whirlwind of like just stress and frustration. Something that came to mind when you were talking about what Molly said to Issa, this quote I have is like, girl, it's not too late if it's what we really want, that you can like change your mind. Like there is that, I think, always that pressure that if you've chosen this path that you got to stick to it for forever. And like, maybe this is counter to what we just agreed on as like a really great thing, but that you can change your mind, that if you said, I'm not going to, you know, be in this relationship anymore, but you still feel like there's something there worth exploring or whatever it might be, that you can, like, there is not a, I don't even know, like an expiration date on things you actually want, that you can still go for them.
Yeah. And I think that committing to a choice doesn't mean never just taking a turn or switching gears. I think it's just about giving your all to what you're doing when you do it. And then, you know, if you need to change, you need to change. I think I saw Issa talking about, Issa Rae,
not
talking
D.
about, yes, not the character.
The real person.
The actual person talking about how Kelly having this experience of quote unquote dying
at
the beginning of the season.
I love the shit out of that. Oh.
And then really examining her life and asking a lot of questions and changing and doing things she thought she would never do, that the character Issa needed to see Kelly do that to sort of realize it's okay. It's okay to do something you said you would never do, or to do something you thought that you were past, or you thought you would never do again.
Ooh, I love that. You know, something else that comes to mind, going back to Molly and therapy and how therapy works, and Molly being Molly's transformation and how she shows up in season 5 is like a testament to that. Like the way that she was able to, when she was preparing her parents' estate before her mom passes, and she like lashes out at her parents, and then she calls her mom back again and she apologizes and she's like, hey, listen, I'm sorry. That was not cool of me. Like her, like as Kelly would say, growth, you know what I mean? Like she really embodied owning, and not owning what she did and moving forward in a way that actually maintains the relationship, as opposed to before it was like, I'm right, this person's wrong. And going back to what Dr. Rhonda said is like, do you want to be right or do you want to be in relationship? And Molly really learned that for herself. And I think by osmosis, it's like the other characters learn that stuff too by watching each other, you know, come full circle. And and something that I, like a big takeaway that I have sort of been thinking about is the reality that it's a doozy and difficult and a real feat, but also doable to witness your friends as they transform and change into different people. Like, I think sometimes, and I know we've talked about this before, is like when people don't see you for who you are now and you get locked in. And I think this happens with like old friends and also like family and like your respective kind of family roles, right? Where it's like the person that you are on the path to becoming, people are like, you're changing, like you're not the same person. You used to be this way. And sometimes that sucks and you lose people along the way, but I'm so grateful that the end result of the changes that everyone was going through really still kept them together. And there were diverging paths. Like there was a season where, where, you know, the block party happened and Issa's assistant for Forevermore afterwards kept on like patting down Molly. Like she has a gun. She might show up and try to shoot the place up because, you know, like there was that much amount of beef, but like it, to me, I take a lot of, pleasure and also comfort in witnessing, you know, like these fictional friends witness growth and be able to like stand by each other and not do that thing where you become almost upset that this person is like not still at your level. Like it's, you know, when Issa looked to Kelly, when Kelly was giving her like announcement that she was pregnant, you could see like the wheels in Issa's eyes like turning. She was like, whoa. And I feel like seasons ago, she might have been like, the fuck is wrong with you from that moment. But it wasn't that, you know, which I think is beautiful.
Yeah, that's so interesting. It's Molly's transformation was maybe the most... it was shown so clearly, right? Like we see her going to therapy for so long, and then Kelly's was, you know, very dramatic because it was like in this season and in the very sort of like flamboyant Kelly kind of way.
Oh God.
But Issa's changes, I think, were often a lot quieter and maybe reflects, her character, that she's maybe more quick to keep things. She keeps more things to herself maybe. And the wheels sort of turn underneath the surface and it's not as kind of out loud.
Let's talk a bit about that, because what I've always enjoyed Issa in the mirror, Issa talking to her, Issa rapping, like, God damn, she's just so freaking funny. And this is something for anyone who's ever watched Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl, like this idea of Issa like talking to herself like carries on from her web series into Insecure, the HBO show. So I would just say watch everything all over again multiple times just to get it all, you know? But it was so fascinating after the final episode for season 5, I was thinking about how Issa said to herself, or she said to Lawrence, I keep thinking about all it took to get here, doubting myself, going back and forth on what I wanted, being scared to waste my time and look stupid in case none of it worked out. And then I realized it was all in my head. And after she said that, I thought about that again and I was like, wow, the mirror version of her that we were all so excited to see her act out, play out, you know, have that conversation, was actually the thing that was holding her back the entire time. Because after she has that realization, the mirror self doesn't come back anymore. Like when Molly and her are having their last phone call and Issa's looking into the mirror, I was expecting, you know, her mirror self to come out, but I was like, it's not there anymore. Why is that? Like, what's happened with her? And it's her ability, I think, or I believe, to recognize the ways that sometimes we hold ourselves back, that there aren't a whole host of people looking at you saying like, yeah, you're going to fail. a lot of the times it's you to you in the mirror. And when we are able to actually recognize that sometimes we're not on our own side, right? Like, for me, recognizing the ways that I get in my own way has been such a huge point of growth, where I'm able to be like, like, there's this part of me that wants to like doubt and be overwhelmed and almost self-sabotage, not because, you know, I don't believe I deserve something, but because I'm like, no, I want to think about this thing to death. Like, let me obsess about this thing to death. Like what you were saying before, causing yourself so much anguish. And so, yeah, like it's interesting thinking about the mirror version of her being a buddy and a companion, but also like maybe not the best thing for her, you know?
Yeah, that's so wild to think about, because like you said, those mirror scenes were some of the funniest scenes of the entire show. And yeah, there often was like a joking around with the self, you know, and like she did seem to be like having fun going back and forth, like you were saying, you know, that buddy self. And at the same time, how many times also did she walk away from that looking deflated? And how to think, you know, about how it was actually making her feel, because sometimes too, you don't even realize how it's making you feel, and you think we're all having fun, and you don't realize how much you're remembering that thing that's being said and holding on to it forever, you know, and in this case, not even realizing it's all coming from just you.
Yeah. Self-deprecation is a thing. Oof. Girl, you
such
know
a
me.
Double-edged sword.
You know me. I always try to joke about shit to the death of me. To the point where sometimes I'm like, wow, I made a joke about that so that I didn't have to actually like engage in a real feeling, because it's easier to joke about it, right? But even though I'm joking about it, I'm still... there's a small dose of that truth that's still like setting in. Like there's something that there that you still are subconsciously or consciously or whatever believing in the way that in the way that you're talking about yourself, or the way that you're not giving yourself the amount of grace or tenderness or courtesy that you actually deserve. And so, yeah, like I think I told you this, or I've talked about it on this podcast, like getting sticky notes and putting affirmations in a bathroom mirror and like right beside my bed. And before, if I was going to be completely honest, like I was just going to, like, I used to think that shit is fucking whack. Like there's no way that that shit actually helps, but it does. Like when you see next to your own gaze of yourself, a reflection of you deserve happiness, or you deserve to create whatever happiness you can. It's not like I sit there being like, yeah. But after some time, I look at that and it's a reminder. It's subtle, right? And so just as much as like that self-deprecation can be my go-to for getting through something, I also have to recognize, I've also recognized, it is also a bit of, like you said before, a double-edged sword that causes me harm and doesn't allow me to actually maybe feel the real feelings. But instead, it's like, let's make this, like, it's had a bit of levity so that at least you don't have to feel like all the burn. But the burn is still there. It's just slow, you know?
It's hard to know, like, where is the line between not taking yourself too seriously and being able to have a sense of humor about yourself versus actually hurting yourself or putting yourself down or doing it in a way that feeds into your insecurities.
Yes. And I don't know that I am able to clearly see that like line, but I think that I'm now much more cautious, aware, attuned, whatever, to the fact that there is a line, and it's not always just as I make a joke about something to myself that it's completely playful, or that it doesn't actually bear weight, or that I don't think about that later on, or any of those kinds of things. And certainly there's always an opportunity, in my opinion, for myself to like not take myself too seriously and to give myself the space to laugh when I can. I think that is like both a blessing and a curse sometimes. But related to that is like another takeaway from the show, which is really being able to like put ego aside and going for what you want, namely love and connection and relationships, like watching. So interestingly enough, there was a couple of articles that I read in preparation for this sacred moment that we're having together. One of them being a piece by the New York Times and Sandra E. Garcia called Insecure Finale Recap, Choosing Confidence. And the other one, which I really loved, it's by Refinery29, Kathleen Newman Bremeg and Ineye Komenimbo, called The Insecure Finale Has Us in Our Feelings About Issa's Choice. Okay. And I love this this article because I think it was really funny. But one of the things that I took from that is a quote by Kathleen, and she says, "I think that Issa needs a grown-up in the room, and the beautiful thing that happened by the end of the series is that she became her own grown-up." And she described how, you know, watching Issa be able to make decisions like we were talking about before and kind of stand in her confidence, but also be willing to be okay with things being open-ended and not having like the weight of expectations and everything figured out get in the way of what she really wants, which is love. And so for me, the takeaway of putting ego aside is also combined with being okay with just figuring it out and not having, not letting your ego and all the things that you say your ego, or the things that your ego says that you're supposed to have, the entitled, picture perfect, it's supposed to feel like this, look like this, do like this, move like this, whatever, get in the way of something that's actually materially what you truly desire. In this case, it was Lawrence. And so, yeah, I'm curious if the like putting your ego aside was something that you took from the show as well, or if it was something different, like as Issa basically extended yet another olive branch to Lawrence to say, I want you. And as, you know, Kathleen in this Refinery29 article talks about, she was kind of sick of the fact that, as Chad said, Lawrence is always sitting at the dock of the bay acting like life is passing him by. Chad. I'm curious if you felt like, you know, Issa putting her quote unquote ego aside and basically saying like, Lawrence, I want to try, was a sign of like supreme growth, or was it like kind of falling back into almost not old patterns, but being like, okay, I guess I'm going to settle for this thing? Cause some people have taken it as like, wow, she put her ego aside and she was able to like approach him and say, this is what I want. You know, that speech where they're talking in her little office space or whatever. And some people are like, that's great. That's awesome. That's amazing. Like they clearly are coming together, but others are saying it's really Issa, you know, once again, showing up and Lawrence receiving something, not Lawrence actually saying something meaningful in a meaningful space. Cause his outburst at Tiffany and Derek's party was not that.
That was dumb. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that kind of goes back to the thing about your choices only have to make sense to you. Mm. I think the way I saw it, Issa wasn't settling or falling back into, you know, an old pattern by getting back together with Lawrence. I think she had to free herself from other people's opinions and even from her own, you know, sort of the negative self-talk, sort of worst opinion of that. I think Lawrence was what, you know, her heart really wanted, and she had to have a lot of humility in order to admit that after everything that they had been through together. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about them, taking that question aside, like how did you feel about Issa and Lawrence ending up together?
I just wanted her to be happy. And I felt like whenever, so, you know, she was envisioning her life into the future with Nathan. that wasn't it for me. I was like, if this is it, if that's what it's supposed to be like, where you're still not sure if this person is going to fit into your life or is actually the one, there was like just not a sense of certainty or security with that choice as she imagined it into the future, that relationship. So for me, it was like, I was totally okay with that, the whole series ending with Issa being happy in her friendships and thriving in her business. Like, I was really okay with that. Her and Lawrence being able to come back together and them getting engaged and, you know, all of like, and all of it coming back full circle in such a cool and hilarious way with Broken Pussy, with Khalees Bossy, at the end. Right. And that's how we started off the entire series. I thought it was just like, so it was the neat and tidy wrap up and the perfect sort of ending that a lot of the times, and this is not an original thing that I'm saying, a lot of the times like black leads don't get that kind of like perfect fairy tale ending. And so I'm really glad that she got that, because at the end of the day, we might have been, you know, team Nathan or team Lawrence, but we were all rooting for Issa. Like, we just wanted her to be happy. And I found myself really overwhelmed when I saw like, oh shit, like it's really gonna, like I kept on feeling, if I was gonna be honest, I kept on feeling like her saying, I just wanna, you know, get to the place where everything is good. I kept on thinking to myself, this is gonna, you know, end at the end of the episode with her waking up from that dream and we're not going to get something satisfying. And I'm so glad that I was wrong. I'm so glad that I was fucking wrong about that, that we actually did get to see that into fruition. Like, but her sort of snapping her fingers, like in this universe, it worked. And it wasn't like a mirror situation or a fantasy, but it was real. So yeah, I just wanted her to be happy, whether it was with Lawrence or not, but I knew it was not going to be Nathan. Let me tell you that. Nathan was not the one for me.
I know, it's true. And I, you know, I said to you at the beginning of this season that I wanted to just see Issa and Nathan, and I thought I was going to have to let go of that dream because it was cut off so suddenly, right? When the first time when they dated and he just kind of disappeared and there was never any closure really.
Yeah.
And then once we saw it for a few episodes, I was like, oh, okay, never mind. We're good. Like, we can just move on. I think that's probably a really good example of when an actor is just really beloved by a show. I feel like because Kendrick Sampson is such an incredible person and such a charismatic person and obviously has such an amazing close relationship with Issa and the rest of the crew, that I feel like Nathan would not have stuck around so long if that was not the case, because it was clearly not it. But I think, I mean, it really shows though how much there is, I don't know, just like it isn't obvious in life all the time, right? Mm. Where like, why are you attached to somebody? Why are you trying to make this work? Are you why do you feel like it's not working? Because I think, you know, being in Issa's position, you're dating somebody and it mostly seems to be going well, but you keep thinking about your ex, and this is an ex where you've broken up more than once. There has been so much heartbreak and drama there. I mean, if you're just going to like take your heart out of it and think about it on paper, you're probably making the wrong decision thinking about your ex, right? Like, that's probably not really love talking. But I think this is where it gets to that balance. Again, we were talking about where's the line between being not taking yourself too seriously versus being too self-deprecating.
Yeah.
And I think here it's like there's a line where we shouldn't only make decisions based on our emotions, you know, and even as a therapist who really believes in the importance of emotions.
Absolutely.
We shouldn't be only making our decisions with emotions. That can lead to a lot of heartbreak and devastation, and it's not always going to work. But sometimes when we do just try to be really rational, we're going to miss what's actually right for us. Mm-hmm. And this is such an example where I think they'd both grown so much and done so much work, and they'd changed, they'd grown in ways where it actually made sense again.
something that Tiffany said was, just because it's not right to other people or it doesn't make sense to other people, that doesn't mean that it isn't for you. Mm-hmm. And I thank you for bringing in the, like, we can't always make decisions based off of our emotions, nor can we do the same for just strictly logic, because there's got to be some sweet spot in between. And I felt like with Issa, that was really clear when Nathan was ending things with her in the car, and she didn't fight it. She just mm-hmm. accepted it, and you could tell she was really hurt, and he was even more hurt. I think he wanted her to fight for him. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, Issa's never really been like I'm a single gal. Like, she seems to want to be in a relationship. So I think that, like, old her might have been like, maybe relied so much more on the, like, heart piece or, like, the emotions piece and really wanted to, like, you know, fight for something. But then I think that there was a nice, beautiful balance of her logic, recognizing, like, this person is not here for, you know, the lifetime. They're here for the season. And, mm-hmm. you know, not to say that Nathan played an insignificant role in her life. Like, he supported her with, you know, the block party and really getting that. Like, he was there with her in that season of her life when she was really trying to explore herself as a creative and as somebody who's doing things in community in meaningful ways that aligned with, like, her vision and her values. And I think that's awesome. So I really just appreciated watching Issa be able to, like, walk away from that. And obviously, you know, the next day she's, like, so sad, like, watching Issa cry and, like, waking up in the morning when Molly shows up with the food and she didn't know, you know, all of that. It's like, it's not like she was completely, you know, divorced from her emotions. It's that, like, deep down, I think she knew that that relationship wasn't going to work and it wasn't really worth fighting for. Meanwhile, she's thinking about Lauren's left, right, and center. So,
well, it's interesting because one of the criticisms of the final season was there were some people who felt that there was so much that we got to see in the final episode and that they would have preferred to see that more of those storylines played out over the course of the season rather than spending so much time watching Issa and Nathan, when it was, I think, clear to most viewers that Issa and Nathan was not, like, the one.
Right.
And I sort of feel the same way, that it might have been, like, really wonderful to get to see some of those storylines from the final episode over a longer period of time. But I think maybe the writers needed to play out, because they went into season five, and for a lot of season five, a lot of them didn't want Issa and Lawrence to end up together.
Right.
And Issa Rae
yes.
did not want Issa D to end up with Lawrence.
And I heard that she switched she had kept on rewriting the final episode up until 2 weeks of them. Like, she was not sure about how they wanted it to end.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe some of that was more originally the final episode mostly took place in Morocco.
Okay.
Things like that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if she was going back and forth between Lawrence and Nathan or no one until that last moment or not. But I think the writers maybe needed to play out. And I think Issa D, the character, needed to play out that possibility, you know, because I think,
yeah,
maybe without really fully exploring this other relationship with this person who, you know, she cared a lot about and really liked, and maybe she did love him in a way,
yeah,
and he really loved her in a way, and there was a lot of good in their relationship, but her heart just wasn't
in it
fully there.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe without that, she wasn't ready or felt like she couldn't feel strong enough in the feeling that she had for Lawrence, that this was something different, you know, that this was something really special that made her feel something that she couldn't just feel for anybody, even if she actually loved someone else.
I love that. I agree with that. I also heard a lot of frustration about season five. Folks just upset that it was too slow. Like, it was not enough. Like, you know, because we got so much juicy, funny, like, outrageous shit from, like, seasons one through four. And then season five comes along and it feels like it's moving kind of at a regular life pace. Like, it's feeling to me, the pace of the season kind of was like, we're moving into like real life and we're going to be sending these characters on their way to be in real life. Not everything's always like shit popping off sideways and, you know, all of that kind of thing. And so, like, for me, I appreciated the almost like mundane aspect of watching, like you said, like Issa and Nathan's relationship actually play out. And then obviously her like imagining what that would look like into the future, but them trying. Because besides Lawrence, like, who else has she actually tried with? Like, Daniel, that was like a stop start. Like, that was like something that happened and it was such a remnant of her past. And it was also the reason that like her and Lawrence broke up. I mean, there were a lot of other reasons, but that was like the sort of, you know, the volcanic explosion, if you will, for their breakup. And so like Daniel was never going to be in the running, right? And you can't just have her pining for this person or feeling like Lawrence pining for him, missing him, without giving her a taste as to like, what would it be like to be with a person that's right in front of you, who's like really not going anywhere anymore. Or at least, you know, there is this recognition that he wants to be here and he supported you and he has redeeming qualities, also has some other qualities that I'm not a big fan of. Like, there were things about Nathan that I was just like, you need to not, like, just
definitely
like what, which was also just a testament to Kendrick's acting abilities. Cause I'm like, wow, like the person that I get the impression he is, you know, as an activist, yeah, is just so much more grounded and like able to hold, yeah, you know, conflict and things like that. But yeah, I appreciate what you said. Like, playing it out is important. Like, when else do we get the opportunity to really play out, especially all of the like insecurities and all of the things that we think might go wrong? Like, let's see them go wrong then. Like, let's see, like, you know, your ex show up to a thing and like, you know, profess his love to you. And what that to me, what that showed for Nathan is that like, it brought out kind of an ugly side of him not being secure enough in that. Mm. Also fair enough that he would be frustrated by, you know, Issa's ex, like basically asking, and them having those sort of, you know, conversations about barbecue that were not about barbecue, over like fighting over Issa. Like, I just found that to be messy and weird, and I didn't love that part of Nathan. So yeah, like playing it out, I think, is a good thing. When else do we have the opportunity to see that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe, like you were saying, maybe the pacing of this season reflected them growing up. Mm. You know, that you're not constantly blowing your life up anymore, right? Molly's not sabotaging every relationship she comes near. Yeah. And, you know, there isn't just like this constant drama. There's maybe still some moments of conflict or, you know, big things happening, but life does calm down a lot when you grow up and you get into your 30s and you've done therapy.
Yes, or at least you hope it would, right? Like,
well, that, in some ways, know, it does, right? Yeah. It's like there's always going to be things that happen. You, yeah, know, Molly's mom died. Like, yeah, there's things that happen that are hard, but it's different when you've done enough work on yourself that you're not adding to your own suffering in, yeah, quite the same way that you did when you were younger and you were less aware of your own kind of patterns and that kind of thing.
That's a really good point. Question for you. Did you think that Tiffany and Derek would make it till the end, so much so that they're now expecting their like second child at the like series finale? Because I did not, girl.
Well, it's funny. I mean, I think they really, in those last couple of seasons, I think showed Tiffany and Derek's relationship to be very, very strong and mature. But it was interesting. Somebody was saying to me, oh, well, we saw Tiffany pregnant with her second child in the last episode, so she must have gotten over that fear that she had of having another kid and getting postpartum depression again.
Right.
And my response was maybe she got over it, but Tiffany also doesn't seem to me to be the type of person who would alter her path based on those types of, based on really anything other than appearances and what she's supposed to do. Like, I think Tiffany's character is very much somebody who, you know, I'm supposed to like get this degree, get this ring, settle down, have this many kids in this timeline, have this type of house. And that's what she's going to do. So by the end of the series, I felt like her relationship with Derek was very strong. Mm-hmm. But even if it wasn't, I don't think that means that Tiffany would have left him or wouldn't have done everything she could to keep the marriage together.
Mm. I think it's fascinating thinking about how she often was sort of like the catalyst for a lot of things happening in everyone else's, like she drove the show as a very small character, which I think is really like, which, yeah, like her and Derek's relationship being almost like goals, but not. And her sort of like the way that she would throw shade and sort of tell the truth about things. And oftentimes Tiffany was the person, as well as Kelly, that could go in between the folks and like bring mm-hmm. people together in really important ways. You know, and even, you know, her having Simone and all of the, like the story arc that came around with Lawrence being back to town and the baby shower and all of those kinds of things. It was like Tiffany played like a minor role, but also pretty integral in like the way that the friend group stayed together. So anyways, I've just, for me, when I first thought, okay, like, how is this going to end for Tiff? I was like, she's going to leave Derek and she's not going to make it to Denver. I thought, because the way that she was talking about going to Denver, I was like, I don't think she's going. Like, I don't know if that's going to work. Maybe they'll move back, whatever. But hey, at least they got what they needed. And I think at the end of the day, Derek was a solid partner. Like, if I could say any person on Insecure was a solid partner, it was Derek.
And I think especially after they had a baby, I think that's where you really see what Derek's made of. Yeah, absolutely. But it's interesting. In some ways, I feel like she is the one who didn't necessarily get a happy ending, because maybe she ends up being happy, but we have no reason to believe that she is. She doesn't. What we see of her is her saying that she's not.
Yes.
And I wonder how much of that is, them wanting to have a little bit of that reality, you know, that not everybody ends up loving where their life is at that point of their life or ever. Mm-hmm. Or just wanting to show sometimes specifically those types of people who seem to, you know, she starts the show kind of being the only person who supposedly
Buddha
has everything that she wants.
Yeah.
So I think that's interesting to then have her end it and her be the only one that you don't think she necessarily has what she wants.
Yeah.
But I also wonder if their relationship with Amanda Seals behind the scenes has anything to do with not them not giving her a happy ending, but just that we didn't see much of her at the end. So there wasn't a lot of room to
develop explore. That. Yeah. I don't even want to get onto that in this podcast because
it's a whole other conversation.
But I 100% agree with what you just said, like at the beginning versus the end, where she started versus where she's at. And maybe the lesson, like the takeaway that I'm getting from Tiffany's character specifically is like, just because you have all the things you're supposed to have doesn't mean you are happy. And sometimes like what I gleaned from her relationship, especially with Kelly, is that like that's her person. Like Kelly seems to be her person in life. And extrapolating that to like the whole theme of Insecure, it was so beautiful to see the ways that Yvonne and Issa D like poured into these characters in ways that
Issa Rae.
Oh, sorry. Yvonne Orji as a actress and Issa Rae as an actor and producer and showrunner and all that stuff. Like the amount of the ways that I feel like these people are actually friends in real life and the sort of like beauty of Issa Rae's like legacy from the show. So I don't know if I'm sure you've watched like the little documentary that accompanied the last episode about the amount of opportunities that Insecure has like made for other people who had never had experience, you know, writing or being in writers' rooms or, you know, being a PA or any of those kinds of things. Just like the importance of relationship and showing up in community. I think I never thought that this show would be the space where that lesson can be kind of extrapolated from or taught. I guess you could have just taken that from the show itself, but like the actual, you know, production of it all, the way that Prentice Penny and Issa made decisions in, you know, writers' rooms and opportunities behind the camera, in front of the camera, all those kinds of things, and the substantive like content that they were talking about in the show, mental health with Kendrick Sampson or like Nathan, toxic masculinity everywhere, colorism, like just there were things that showed up that I was like, wow, like we oftentimes don't get these types of opportunities to see so much of, as Issa talks about in that documentary, just like normal Black life or just like the everydayness of Black people and the beauty in that as well. And so, yeah, I have been so, I'm really sad that it's over, but I'm also so grateful that we were able to like watch it as it was emerging and like be like as the episodes were airing and were able to be part of. I know you specifically because you were on Twitter all the time. I never really spent time on Twitter as episodes dropped, but to be present in the age of Insecure in the same way we talk about being alive in the age of Beyonce, like watching her create amazing things, it's like I can't wait to see all the other opportunities that will come from having, you know, folks having worked on Insecure, been affiliated with Insecure and all of that. I just think it's gorgeous and beautiful, and I'm so grateful that we also got to like talk about it for years.
Yeah, it's been such an experience, like watching, like you said, the parallels, watching behind the scenes these creators growing and coming into their own and, you know, arriving at industry dominance, and seeing the relevance of the show, getting to talk through all of these characters and all of these issues, the soundtrack.
Girl,
I feel like the soundtrack, not only is it just an incredible thing to listen to, I feel like it had a lot to do with the sort of renaissance of women's rap that's happening now. So it's just, yes. It's been such a gift, and I'm so happy that we've gotten to have it as such a centerpiece in our friendship too.
Oh, me too. God, you're totally right. Not to mention like the costume design, set design, the way that it was shot. Like, anyways, this is going to be a wrap for talking about the wrap for Insecure. It's just been a pleasure. I'm sad, but I know we're going to watch Rap Shit together when it is.
Oh, yeah. So can't wait.
So there'll be a whole other show that is produced by Issa, and hopefully she has cameos and appearances in that too that we get to enjoy together. Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community, and we cannot do this without you.